This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
I'm Claire Fallon.
And I'm Emma Gray.
We are friends and reality dating show fans, and the only thing we love as much as love stories is lovingly snarking on them.
Whether you love love or love to hate it, listen to Love to See It, our podcast dissecting all the romance we see on screen.
From reality dating shows like The Bachelor and Love is Blind to classic rom-coms like You've Got Mail, we recap in obsessive detail and unpack all the weird messages they send us about love, sex, and dating.
Listen to Love to See It on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the amazing Rico Bronya podcast with your host, Evan Roberts.
It is Rico Bronya. And for the first time in this 2025 Major League Baseball season, we can say the Mets are scuffling. The Mets are struggling ever since the three-game sweep over the Philadelphia Phillies. This has not been the best brand of New York Mets baseball. A split in Washington against the Nationals that featured two kicking the ball losses, a losing series at home against the Diamondbacks, and now this garbage, losing two out of three to the St. Louis Cardinals and being swept of a doubleheader on a Sunday afternoon, both one-run losses, both games in which it felt like, yes, the Mets hit into terrible luck, but in both games, the Mets missed that big hit, that big, big hit, that enormous hit. And so they lose two out of three to a crappy St. Louis Cardinal team. Let's start off with the way this thing ended. And the way this thing ended was Michael McGreevy, not the former governor. I think that was Peter McGreevy. But Michael McGreevy, a former Cardinals top prospect, coming into a game with the bases loaded and one out right after Juan Soto got absolutely robbed by Victor Scott. And little did we know when McGreevy came into this game in the fourth inning and struck out Vientos and got very lucky on a line drive off the bat of Brandon Nimmo, little did we know that Michael McGreevy would now live in our heads in Met history as that guy who came into a random game in early May and somehow pitched 5 2/3 innings scoreless baseball to completely shut down this offense. This game, the finale of this series, as well as the first game of this doubleheader, kind of felt very similar, in which they get some runs, they have opportunities on the board to score many more runs, they get plenty of base hits, 20 in the doubleheader, and they end up with zero wins. A lot of hard hit balls, a lot of bad luck, great effort by the bullpen, we shouldn't ignore that, but that big hit continues to elude them. Let's face it, outside of Alonso, who had his moments in this doubleheader, nobody on this team, not one person, not Lindor, not Soto, not Nimmo, nobody has consistently gotten hits with runners in scoring position. And that obviously continued in the finale of this series. Really, it goes back to the bad luck, and it is bad luck. That's not just to whine about it. It's the reality. You know, sometimes in baseball, I think the Mets had a lot of really good luck at the start of this season, a lot of times where bloops would find the grass, little ground balls would find the hole. That has certainly not been the case over the last week, and it certainly wasn't the case in this doubleheader. You go back to the very beginning of this game, game two of the doubleheader, game three of the three-game series. Soto gets a one-out single to start this ball game off strongly. Alonso hits the ball like a rocket right into a double play. Brandon Nimmo comes up, one on, nobody out in the second inning, hits the ball into a double play. They get a base hit from Starling Marte. They get a walk from Francisco Alvarez, who had a very productive series when he played. And then it was Luis Angel Acuna's turn to not come through with a base hit. They did get a few of them in the third inning, specifically Alonso driving a run in, Marte the two-run hit, Alvarez an RBI single. But that fourth inning, that was the inning where they really lost the game. And part of it was the bad luck of Soto hitting a ball that's over the freaking fence, and Victor Scott makes a leaping catch. Look, Juan Soto has been frustrating in that with guys on base, he has not been productive. And he's had a few of these opportunities over the last week during this stretch of games where they've gone 4-6 in their last 10. And Soto's had opportunities to come up, be a hero, kind of have that defining Met moment, and it hasn't happened. But he hit the ball in the fourth inning over the fence. Let's be honest. He hit a three-run home run, and somehow Victor Scott, to his credit, was able to get all the way back to the wall, timed his jump perfectly, and made an incredible play. And then even in the sixth inning, he comes up, tie ball game, and off the bat, I thought he was hitting one over the left field fence. I thought we were going to see Soto go oppo. And it wasn't a great play by Lars Nootbaar. It was just Lars Nootbaar having room to make that play. So you've got the bad luck that Juan Soto has faced, but until he consistently gets those big hits, he's obviously going to face a lot of criticism from Met fans. But he has hit into a lot of bad luck, if we're being honest about it. Even in the eighth inning, not that he hit the ball hard, but with two outs and nobody on in the eighth inning and kind of the hope that Soto could at least get on base ahead of Pete Alonso, he hits a foul ball. He should get another opportunity. And Nolan Arenado makes an over-the-shoulder basket catch crashing into the net. He has faced a lot of bad luck. And then Brandon Nimmo, who did not have the greatest series after he had the 9-run slugfest from last week. But Brandon Nimmo hits a ball like a rocket ship, and Jordan Walker makes, I didn't even want to say a good play. He kind of made an easy play more difficult than it had to be. But Brandon Nimmo hit the ball 111 miles per hour. So my problem isn't even necessarily that fourth inning. A lot of that's bad luck. It's the fifth inning. It's Francisco Lindor with two on and two out after Tyrone Taylor gets hit by a pitch. At this point, we're still not sure if this Michael McGreevy is going to put together an incredible performance. And he pumped three consecutive fastballs right past Francisco Lindor when they had an opportunity to regain the lead. And after that, McGreevy went to work. They got a two-out hit by Mark Vientos. Nimmo grounds out. He pitches a 1-2-3 seventh, a 1-2-3 eighth, a 1-2-3 ninth. The guy retires the last 10 batters. So as much fight as the Mets showed in game one, which we'll get to, not that they didn't show any fight, but they got mowed down. That's the reality. They made Michael McGreevy look like Cy freaking Young. With that said, Tyler McGill was back to being Tyler McGill, a very mediocre performance by McGill. And you could tell early on he did not have his best stuff because even in the 1-2-3 inning he pitched, they hit a lot of hard hit balls off of him. There were a lot of hard hit balls in game two of this doubleheader. Mets, Cardinals, everybody was hitting the ball 109 miles an hour. McGill makes the mistake, giving up the two-run home run to Burleson. He pitches into, I'd say he created the bad luck in the third inning by issuing back-to-back walks in front of the three and four hitters in the Cardinal lineup. So even though Nolan Arenado is behind in the count, and he hits this little roller to third base, and it's just awful luck for McGill, he created the bad luck by walking Lars Nootbaar on four pitches. He created the bad luck by walking Mason Winn. As Bob Murphy would say, all those base on balls. The only thing I'll give McGill a little bit of credit for, and it's a tiny amount of credit, is that after he gives up the infield hit to Nolan Arenado, in which at the time the Mets were lucky, because Mason Winn should have scored on the low throw by Vientos that Alonso couldn't scoop out, then he kind of got tripped up over third base. It didn't matter because Wilson Contreras hit a base hit right after, and that drove in the Mason Winn run that didn't score. But the only thing I'll give McGill credit for is that he was able to give them two scoreless innings, so at least the Mets didn't have to go to the bullpen in the fourth or fifth inning. McGill was at least able to complete the fifth inning and put together a very mediocre five-inning, four-run performance. This is what last year we called the McGill. The five-inning, four-run, let's walk a bunch of guys. In this case, three walks. Two of them came back to score. Let's hit a guy. Let's give up a home run. Let's throw a million pitches. McGill's had a very good year, so it's tough to kill him, but I can say that this performance was very McGillian, very 2024 Tyler McGillian. The bullpen did an okay job. Look, Max Kranick has mostly been good. It was unfortunate that he made one bad pitch to Victor Scott that he ripped up the alley in right center field. And as Pozo is rounding the bases, I am thinking there's no way they're going to let this guy score from first base. As much as Scott ripped it up the alley, problem is on a play like that, everyone's got to be perfect. Tyrone Taylor's got to get to it in a quick fashion. He's got to make a perfect throw to the relay man. The relay man's got to make a perfect throw to the plate. Unfortunately, before we even got to the throw to the plate, the throw was bounced to Acuna, who let it go to Lindor, who just for whatever reason couldn't make the play. And I did have a sick feeling in that bottom of the sixth inning that when that run scored on the ninth place hitter, getting a double up the alley and the slowest guy on the Cardinal lineup scoring from first base and the Mets not executing what would have been a very good play, but not executing, even turning into a play at the plate, I did have a sick feeling like this is going to be the difference in this game. That's it. And so Kranich wasn't good because he did give up the lead, but Stanek got the job done, and he even picked up Francisco Alvarez because when Alvarez couldn't block the 0-2 pitch in the dirt where Contreras struck out, that could have turned into a disaster. And luckily, Ryan Stanek was able to get a big out against Alec Burleson. Edwin Diaz finally pitched. Almost forgot he was on the team. Finally, Carlos Mendoza is forced to go to Diaz down a run. This is what pisses me off from last week. You cannot predict the future. You can't. Just like Diaz pitching in this game, in the Sunday game two of the doubleheader, the Mets may need him every time in Arizona. God willing, they'll need him in every game in Arizona. But you can't predict it. They also may not need him at all in Arizona, like we ended up seeing with not using Diaz in two or three of that series against Arizona. You don't know if you're going to need him in the series against St. Louis. You don't know if you're going to need to use him the next day. So instead of overthinking it, sometimes use the player in that high leverage situation and worry about Thursday, if that's even a situation that arises. It's a good case scenario if you need to use Edwin Diaz multiple days in a row because it means you've got yourself a one-run lead or a two-run lead. So finally, he goes to Edwin Diaz. He was shaky. He gets through it, doesn't give up a run, and the Met bats do nothing with it. The Met bats cannot take advantage of the fact that this bullpen did an outstanding, I can't say outstanding because Kranich gave up a run. The bullpen did a decent job at least keeping that one-run deficit at one. Now, let me get to Starling Marte. So if you're watching game two of this doubleheader, you know that in game one of the doubleheader, Jesse Winker had to leave with a side issue, which does not sound good. He's being flown back to New York. They're going to do more imaging on him. And Carlos Mendoza, who is very upfront when it comes to these injuries, has said it is likely an IL stint. So it's an IL stint. And we'll see where the Mets go to replace him on the roster. Brett Beatty has been dealing with a toe issue at AAA. So Beatty could get the call. They could make the call to Jared Young, who can play all over the place, a left-handed bat. Young and Beatty fit because they're both left-handed bats. They could make the call to Drew Gilbert. Certainly possible. I would lean towards Beatty getting the recall, assuming he's healthy, giving him another opportunity, because I do think this will create an opportunity for Beatty to get some at-bats. But Winker gets hurt in the first game. Starling Marte playing right field for the first time this season. And Keith Hernandez even said this on the broadcast. You could feel it. Starling Marte was a different guy out there. It was almost like he was so pumped up to finally be out there, glove in hand, playing the field, being a contributing baseball player. And think about what he does in his first two plate appearances now as a right fielder. He gets a base hit in the second inning, promptly steals second. Comes up with a huge two-run hit in the third inning, which at the time felt like the biggest hit of the game. I mean, I guess it was, and it gave the Mets the lead. And two innings later, he comes out of the game. All of a sudden, as the Mets are beginning, I guess it was the bottom of the fifth inning, we see that Jose Ozocar has come into play right. And logically, I'm worried. I'm like, Jesus, they're going to lose both of their DHs in the same day. Not only are the Mets going to lose two games to the Cardinals, they're going to lose the left-handed side and the right-handed side of their DH platoon. And they're going to do it as both guys, specifically Marte, are starting to wake up. Well, we find out after the game, if you haven't heard, let me be the one to tell you, that good news. I got good news. Marte is not hurt. There is no injury. The bad news is this was a part of the plan. So the plan, and I get it's May 4th, all right? I don't want to get nuts about May 4th, but the plan was for Starling Marte in a regular season game, not a spring training game, to play five innings and then come out for Jose Azokar? That's the plan? Like, I'm good with Soto getting a DH day. I'm good with Brandon Nimmo getting a DH day. In fact, I brought this up on the Fan, not even here on the Rico, that I've been surprised how Nimmo, Lindor, Soto, even Alonso, no one's had DH days. And the Mets should be able to use the DH spot as not just their Winker Marte platoon, but as a possibility to give one of their veteran players a half an off day, especially the guys that play every single day. Juan Soto plays every single day. Brandon Nimmo, for the most part, plays every single day. Pete Alonso absolutely plays every single day. Same with Lindor. So if you want to take a day and have one of those guys DH, that sounds like a good thing. So I certainly have no issue with Juan Soto getting a DH day. I have an issue with the fact that Starling Marte was treated like it's a spring training game. Yeah, we got five innings out of him. Good job there, Starling. Even though Starling Marte went 2 for 3, drove in 2 runs and stole a base, and you're taking him out of the game like it's the middle of March. I just don't love it. I don't love it. I mean, the guy hasn't played the field all year long. Are we really concerned that 4 more innings, maybe less, because if you want to take him out in the 8th inning or the 9th inning with a lead, of course, the 5th inning, you're taking this guy out of the game. So it really only cost the Mets 1 at-bat. Azokar came up in the 7th inning. And then in the 9th inning, they went down 1-2-3. The on-deck hitter was Azokar. I couldn't see if they were sending up a pinch hitter, but I assumed Jeff McNeil was going to pinch hit for Azokar. But I don't know. I just don't love that. I don't want to get nuts because it's May, and I know you got to manage for the 162 like Carlos talks about, but some things feel just absurd. And Starling Marte playing 5 innings feels absurd, like it's a spring training game. Am I overreacting, Hoff, or am I sane for being a little critical of the handling of Marte here?
Well, when you watched him actually perform at a different level, like, this is the whole criticism, and I hate to compare it to the Yankee stuff, but like Giancarlo Stanton, one of his biggest gripes is he actually plays better when he's on the field too. And it's like, well, but he's fragile. We don't want him getting hurt. We want to save his. Don't make a difference. If the guy's productive doing something right now, let him play. And you're right. When I saw him steal a base, I go, something is different about him today. You know, he just feels like he's at a different peak, a different level. Maybe he's just comfortable, whatever it is. But like, it gives him something. One thing I will always say, everybody's talked about it. If you just solely play DH, your head gets into you get too much into your head about hitting.
And it's not just Marte being a DH, it's Marte being a part-time DH. And that's why on the last Rico, one of the Mendy criticisms coming from the audience was Marte being in the lineup against a right-hander at the beginning of the Arizona series. And my counter is, the guy's got to play. He's not used to this. You know, and even in this situation now with Jesse Winker going down, I want to play Starling Marte. Like, whether it's Jared Young or Brett Beatty or whomever that gets the call, Marte can hit. He has shown you he can hit. I know he isn't off to the most consistent start this year, but a part of that is probably attributed to the fact he's not playing consistently. And it's difficult, especially for a guy that throughout his entire career has been an everyday player. And now you're telling him, yeah, you're going to play a day, then you're going to sit for 3 days, then you're going to play again. So to your point about your head being in the game when you're playing the field, I get it. I'm sure he misses that, but he also doesn't even play every day anyway. So I hope that they use this Winker injury as an opportunity for Marte to actually play a little bit more, because I think he's going to produce more. I really do. Man, now, I've been very high on Starling Marte compared to most. Some Met fans wanted him DFA'd in spring training, so Alexander Canario could be on the freaking roster. Where's he at, by the way? But I don't know. 5 innings and then sitting down feels a little weak.
And to be fair, like, if he's playing left field, for example, I'm not sure, is that where they were you know, he was playing for Soto today, so I get
He's playing right field. He was playing right field for Soto, yeah.
Right, but like, but if for some reason they choose to put him in left field because Nimmo, you know, they want to give Nimmo a DH day, right? I'd feel better about that because, personally speaking, I think that Nimmo and Marte at this point in time are almost equal defensively. Like, there's something just off with Nimmo.
Well, in fairness, so Starling Marte played 5 innings in the field. Not one ball was hit to him. So we didn't get this. It's kind of like McNeil's first game in center field where we're like, man, nothing's been hit to this guy. So we could really test him. So maybe if we see Starling Marte as the butcher defensively as he was last year, that could change the tone a little bit and say, ah, stick him at DH. I think the DH stuff is more dependent on the health and keeping the freshness of your other guys. It's not really as much about Marte as it is, hey, how often does Juan Soto need a DH day? How often does Brandon Nimmo need a DH day? If you go to game 2 of the doubleheader, which we'll talk about, Brandon Nimmo was the DH in that game. It was interesting how Mendy managed the doubleheader. The Mets only played 3 doubleheaders last year. They had the game 161-162, which a throwout because it was a playoff game, and then it wasn't. It went from a playoff game to a spring training game. Then they had a doubleheader against the Dodgers. That was the Jorge Lopez day. And they had a doubleheader very early in the season against the Tigers. Those are 3 really memorable doubleheaders, actually, now that I think about it last year. Those were the only 3. Game 161, of course, memorable. The doubleheader against the Dodgers, which I think that's what led to the Jorge Lopez glove throw. I think it was all on the same, it was the same series, obviously. And then the Detroit series where the Mets were being no hit, they're hitting rock bottom. Pete Alonso hits a game tying home run and they begin their early turnaround before they started sucking again. And I didn't notice this last year. Maybe it's because there were only 3 doubleheaders. Mendy took an approach that I really like. This is something I would always love as a baseball fan. Go conservative in game 1 and then more aggressive in game 2. And so he goes Blade Tidwell game 1, almost saying, you know what? Game 1's the house money game. So let me throw the kid out there in game 1. And I've got the starter I trust a little bit more in Tylor Megill coming up in game 2. And even with the lineup, he sits Alvarez in game 1. He DHs Brandon Nimmo. He starts Jose Azokar in center field. So it was almost, it's I want to say his B lineup, a little bit more his B game in terms of who was starting in Tidwell and who was in the lineup. And then you could go look at game 2 and say, all right, I better get the victory. Obviously, nothing worked because they lost both games. Let me start with Blade Tidwell. I know we were all excited to see him because here's an actual prospect. Here's not an opener situation like we've seen before, even though the opener situation has actually worked out with Brazoban pitching an inning in a third or inning in 2/3 or dare I say 2 innings, and then you go to your Hagenman or Waddell. There is something exciting, I admit, about seeing a kid who very well could be in this rotation later this year or maybe next year. He had his moments. You know, I thought early in the game he had his moments. He got through the first inning. He gives up the home run to Wilson Contreras, walks the next hitter, so that inning could have become a disaster, and he fights through it, and he strikes out Lars Nootbaar in a big spot. He gets lucky in the third inning on the sacrifice fly that turns into the double play. But really where I thought Mendy screwed up or was just being really B-game-ish with the first game of the doubleheader was letting Tidwell continue in this game third time around the batting order. You have a bullpen that is, you know, relatively fresh. Edwin Diaz hasn't pitched in a while. You didn't play on Saturday. And on Friday, the only guys you used were Jose Buteau and Ryan Stanek. Plus, you've added guys to your bullpen. The guys you used, by the way, the day before that, some of them aren't even on the roster anymore. So you had yourself a very fresh bullpen. Yes, it's a doubleheader, but nevertheless, you also know you're adding another arm in game 2 in Dednell Nunez, who it was announced ahead of time is going to be activated for game 2 of the doubleheader. Austin Warren kind of got maneuvered into the 27th man. Nunez is going to come up for Tidwell. So if you're Mendy, Sure, it's a doubleheader, and sure, you've got three games coming up in Arizona, so you are talking about five games in 4 days. I fully get it. You do have a fresh bullpen. And in the fourth inning, you're in a game right now that is 2-2. Tie game. Tidwell has been shaky to begin with, and after he gets the first out of the fourth inning, he gives up a base hit to Victor Scott, and this is really where he's got to come out of the game in my mind. He hits the ninth place hitter, Jose Barrero. Once that happens, you got to get him out of the game. I don't understand it. Like, that was the part of this that confused me. You have a young pitcher who has been shaky at best. He's now about to go third time around the batting order. Why are you keeping him in the game? Now, with that said, I'm already ready to take him out. Man, he kept him in for five more batters. He gets Newt Barr to fly out. He walks Burleson on four pitches. He gives up a base hit to Brendan Donovan. He walks Nolan Arenado. All the while, he's still in the game. And then finally, and this was bad luck. This is another example of where we can bitch and moan all we want about a lot of different things. The Mets are also battling the fact that they're not getting the luck they got earlier this season. Whether it's Juan Soto hitting a ball that's robbed by Victor Scott, whether it's Brandon Nimmo hitting a line drive on the screws in which Jordan Walker makes a great play. So, yeah, you got the hard hit balls in which you're getting screwed or you're facing the bad luck. But how about the Wilson Contreras? Let me flick the bat at it on 1-2, and it finds a hole in right field. We all have to admit, bad luck. But still, five batters into facing the top of this lineup third time around the order. And he's keep him in the game. And I think this was another example. Mendy's done this a lot recently where he's thinking big picture. He's managing for the 162, which I'm not against. I just think there are certain times in which you can also, you know, try to win the game that you're involved in. And I think keeping Tidwell in this game was a disaster. You knew something bad was going to happen. You hit the ninth place hitter. There's 2-1 and one out. All right, you keep him in the game. He gets a big out against Newt Barr. He walks Burleson on four pitches in front of Brendan Donovan, the Cardinals' best hitter right now. We all knew this was going to end badly. So I hated that. I mean, just to be honest, I think I've criticized Mendy more over the last 4 or 5 days than I have all of last season. And it's not just because they're losing. The Mets could have come back and won this game, which we'll get to. And trust me, I'd still be talking about this. I would still be complaining about the handling of Blade Tidwell in the fourth inning. But after that, kudos to the Met bullpen. Because Hennessy's Cabrera comes in, gets the job done. He even squeezes two ups, as Mendy likes to say. Gets through the fourth, pitches the fifth, even starts the sixth. Brazoban does a really good job striking out Nolan Gorman. Austin Warren, who is here for one day, comes in, pitches a clean seventh inning. Reed Garrett gets through the eighth inning. So the bullpen did a great job of at least allowing this offense to fight back down 6-2. The problem was, as we have seen a lot of recently, big hit doesn't happen. Sixth inning, great opportunity. McNeil draws a leadoff walk. Acuna gets a base hit. They got two on. They got nobody out for Jose Azokar. He grounds into a fielder's choice. You're still set up, though, with Francisco Lindor, who grounds into a fielder's choice. And then Soto, in a huge spot, strikes out looking. This is where Soto is going to take the heat, even though, yes, he's pitched into a lot of bad luck. Sixth inning, he comes up, big spot, down by three runs, strikes out looking. You've got Vientos bouncing to a double play after he took over for the injured Jesse Winker. And then you got the eighth inning. And this is obviously where the game got defined in a lot of ways because they do rally. Torrens draws that leadoff walk right after he swung at ball four, that 3-1 fastball that was up. And you could tell how pissed off he was. But hey, it turns into a walk anyway. Acuna, who got on base four times in game one of the doubleheader, bounces a base hit to right. And Tyrone Taylor, who was on base a million times in this series, pounds a base hit to left field. Bases loaded, nobody out, down by three runs. Lindor, Soto, Alonso, you got to win the game here. I don't know who's going to perform the magic, but bases loaded, one out, top of the order. This is where you win the freaking baseball game. And to Lindor's credit, bounces the base hit, drives in two runs, two on, one out, down by a run, Soto's moment. That's what I'm thinking. I'm like, all right, this is Juan Soto's moment. He's so close. He had the back-to-back strikeouts, both with guys in scoring position, which is part of the problem. Soto's hits seem to come when there's nobody on base. If we're being honest, look, he's got four hits with runners in scoring position all year. It's not like I'm making it up. Now, I'm not worried. I think he will get hot. I don't think he's struggling under the pressure. I mean, again, he hit that home run that got robbed of him in game two with runners in scoring position. So it's not like I'm worried he can't do it, but the reality is he hasn't done it yet. That's just the reality. The walk that he draws against the lefty Jojo Romero, again, I said this last week, I love it. As much as I'm envisioning Soto hitting a bomb of a three-run home run and giving the Mets the lead and having that, you know, early season defining moment, as cool as that would be, the brilliance of Soto, for the most part, you know, take away those two looking strikeouts a few innings earlier, is having this kind of great eye. And when you have Pete Alonso behind him, him drawing a walk to load the bases up down by a run with one out in the eighth inning seems wonderful. Seems fantastic. The problem was, and I don't want to bitch about Jim Wolf, but I will, the 3-2 pitch to Pete Alonso was ball four. The game should be tied. Pete Alonso, and this has been going on since spring training, he's done a lot of things great offensively. One of the things he's been doing incredibly well is laying off pitches just off the plate. I go back to the beginning of spring training with that challenge system. I'm telling you, I think it was the first spring training game they played, and he challenged the 1-2 pitch he got punched out on, and it was reversed. He ended up drawing a walk, and like I've noticed how good he's been laying off pitches, not the sliders in the dirt, but pitches that are a centimeter off the plate, and that 3-2 pitch was off the plate, and it was a missed call, and it sucks. It's baseball. I guess it's a part of the bad luck we're talking about because, yeah, Pete Alonso struck out with the bases loaded. Let's all rip him. He really walked with the bases loaded. And Jim Wolf missed the call. Now, is the game over right then and there? No. If you're Brandon Nimmo, go come through with a base hit. You know, that's it. Go rip one up the alley, Mr. 9 RBI. He didn't. He popped up. Is it over then? No, you're only down by one run. You're rallying the eighth inning. That two-run hit by Francisco Lindor brought you back in the game. You're a swing away from tying the game up. You get a leadoff hit from Mark Vientos. Again, inserted into the game, replacing the injured Jesse Winker. Luis Torrens strikes out. I was wondering, where's Francisco? Do you want to use Francisco? Are we thinking about using Francisco Alvarez? Or are we so fooled by Luis Torrens and his .238 batting average that we can't use Francisco Alvarez? He doesn't. Torrens strikes out. McNeil off the bat, I thought, magic. Line drive right at Lars Nootbaar. A part of the bad luck the Mets were hitting into. And then finally, Luis Angel Acuna, who was on base four times in this game, a chance to be a hero, pops it up to second base. Ball game over. Funk continues. Or funk really begins, if you will. Honestly, the funk began after the Philly series. They have played 10 games since the sweep against Philadelphia, and they are 4-6. And they're 4-6 against teams that don't scare you. Four against Washington, three against Arizona, and obviously these three against the St. Louis Cardinals. Very, very, very disappointing doubleheader sweep and series loss to St. Louis because Friday night was fun. Friday night was 17 hits, 9 runs fun. And basically everybody hit. Pete Alonso hit the 2-run home run in the fifth inning behind in the count 0-2. Brandon Nimmo was on base 5 times. They got really good pitching out of Clay Holmes. I thought Clay did a really good job, especially, and this is the sign of a good starting pitcher, settling down after the first three innings. He gives up the 3 runs early, pitches a 1-2-3 fourth, a 1-2-3 fifth, gets through the sixth inning. Those 92 pitches, a really solid outing by Clay Holmes, but it was about the offense. And I thought, especially going 4-for-9 with runners in scoring position, okay, Met bats are breaking out. Met bats are going to kind of make you forget what happened against Arizona. But then, of course, Sunday happened. So disappointing, I think, is the word of the day to describe this series loss to the St. Louis Cardinals. They had 17 hits on Friday. They had 10 hits in each game of the doubleheader. So they had 37 hits in three games. And it felt like they were missing the big, big ones. They had a few big ones. Look, I don't want to minimize Alonso's home run in the fifth inning behind in the count 0-2 because let's not forget, when he hit that home run, the Mets are losing the game 3-2. Now 3-2 in the fifth inning. Not that it's 3-2 in the eighth inning, but it's 3-2 in the fifth inning. Alonso's behind in the count 0-2, and he pounds that home run, and the Met offense was off and running after that. But right now, as they go to Arizona, and I know we've been saying this for a month, so it's a broken record. I have confidence they're going to score a lot of runs. I have confidence in this lineup, but it is damn frustrating watching this offense come up small in big spots over and over and over again. And sooner rather than later, Juan Soto is going to have to be in the middle of it. And a lot of it's bad luck. I get it. I understand that's what baseball is. That's why when they're winning 21 of their first 30, that's an exaggeration. Whatever they started the season off, I forgot now. All I know is right now, the record is 22-13. 9 games above 500, 2.5 games up on the Phillies. But when they were winning all those games early, there was a lot of good luck there. Right now, the luck is kind of hitting them across the side of the head. This is going to be a challenging Rico, I'm the man now, star of the series. But like I warned you at the beginning of the Rico Bronya season, I warned you. I said, when you lose a series, it's always going to be more challenging. Imagine when we get swept at some point, then it's really going to be challenging. But every series features a Rico star of the series. I received an email from a gentleman who said, nobody should be awarded the I'm the man now award for this series. Ron Heverly writes, you shouldn't even do it in this series recap because the team looks pathetic. The pitching was horrible and they couldn't do anything in the clutch moments. Nobody is deserving. What a waste of Star Wars day watching this bleep show. Star Wars day. Why Star Wars day? Because it's May the 4th.
May the 4th be with you. Yes.
When did this become like a holiday? Is that a recent phenomenon?
Yeah, no, it's been going on for a while. It's been going on for at least a decade. It's May 4th. Like, it's just like you'll think about it. People that are Star Wars fans, May the 4th be with you. It just kind of all works out. I mean, dude, we had Eastchester. We had opening day today. Guess what they did? Terry Collins was there, by the way. Awesome. Great. Fantastic. Gave a great speech to the kids. But you know who else was there? Darth Vader. Darth Vader, the Empire, whatever the other evil guy was. I mean, they had all these Star Wars guys there. So it's a big deal.
All right. Well, then happy May the 4th for those that celebrate. I give you one positive email before we pick Rico. I'm the man now, star of the series. Scott Rappaport writes, 5 base hits. I have to remind myself this is a long season and the Mets are 5 base hits from being 27-8. They need to be better when it matters, and they will be. Scott, a Met fan in Philadelphia. Sure, you could look at it that way. I mean, you can. There's a lot of close losses. There are also a lot of close wins. So if you play that game of, hey, they were a couple of big hits away from sweeping the Cardinals. They were a couple of non-blown saves away from sweeping the Nationals. They were a couple of big hits away from sweeping Arizona. Yeah, I guess you could rationalize how this team could have an even better record by a lot, but you could also look at the close games and kind of go the other way and say, well, if they didn't do this or they didn't do that, they would have lost instead of winning. So you can go both ways. By the way, you could celebrate the highlights of this long baseball season with Mio Sparkling Sake, a true crowd pleaser. Light, bubbly, and easy to enjoy, whether you're at Citi Field or your favorite spot. Ask for Mio Sparkling Sake by name, a new tradition served chilled. Imported from Japan, the official sake of Rico Bronya. Enjoy responsibly. So, I have an idea on who I'm leaning towards for the Rico I'm the Man Now star of the series. But I have written down a bunch of different candidates, but there's one guy I'm leaning towards. Hoff, I know it's bittersweet because they got swept of a doubleheader and they lost 2 out of 3. But is there anyone who jumps out at you that you would nominate as the Rico I'm the Man Now star of the series?
There's two. One, because, I mean, he didn't play much, but he went 4 for 5. He looked phenomenal out there. Tyrone Taylor, he had a great – every time he had a chance to perform, he showed up. And he's been phenomenal. I think his batting average is up at 244. Like, he's hitting the ball. Defensively, we talked about how special he's been. But the one guy that I think that is more deserving of that, because he's come back and he really, besides 2 games, he's done nothing but hit. He goes he gets 3 hits on Friday. He was a big part of their win on Friday. You talk about the one person that seems to be hitting with runners in scoring position. It is Francisco Alvarez. He's been looking fantastic. So I lean towards him. I know he only played 2 games, but he went 4 for 7. I mean, you're talking about a guy who's been on fire.
Well, keep this in mind. The Mets had 37 hits in 13 games, so a lot of the offensive numbers are pretty good. Let's throw a few candidates at you. Number one, Clay Holmes. Clay Holmes delivered a really strong start in the one game the Mets did win. He settled in after giving up 3 runs in the first 3 innings, so he's certainly worthy of mentioning. You talk about Tyrone Taylor. What's weird for Tyrone Taylor is he started only 1 game in this series. He didn't even start the opener, but when he came into the game replacing Jeff McNeil for defense, he promptly got a double in the 7th inning, which helped them add insurance that inning. They actually tacked on another run, so he was contributing to an insurance run in that 7th inning and also played quality defense in center field. And you're right, his final numbers read like this. 4 for 5 at the plate, 6 times on base in 7 plate appearances, and if Alonso comes through, or Soto doesn't walk and comes through, or Nimmo comes through, I think we're talking about the Tyrone Taylor pinch hit base hit for Jose Azokar as a huge hit in game 2 of this series. So I don't think you're wrong. I think he's a great candidate. He also won last week, by the way, the Arizona series. So Tyrone Taylor could walk away with back-to-back awards in series they lost, by the way, which is not exactly something you want. Francisco Alvarez, you're right. Huge game 1, 3 for 5, including beating out a double play ball, which I thought was underrated, controlling the pitching staff with his weird hand motions. Like, yeah, calm down, I got you. He was a combined 4 for 7 with 4 RBIs. And he was also on base 6 times in 9 plate appearances. So I guess it goes back to why he didn't pinch hit for Torrens in game 2 like I talked about.
Yeah.
Especially with the way he's been hitting. Juan Soto, honorable mention for Juan. He went 2 for 5 in the opener of this series. 1 for 4 with a walk in game 2. 1 for 5 in game 3. 4 for 14. But I think the lack of the big hit. A couple of big looking strikeouts. Unfortunately, the home run that robbed them. That ball goes out. Mets win this game. Soto's probably the Rico star of the series.
No doubt. No doubt. And again, like, this is a game of inches, maybe a game of feet even, because that probably needed a good foot to get out, as Keith Hernandez was saying. And it was just, that was one of those plays where you see him hit the ball and you just feel that's his moment. It's going to happen. I'm looking at Scott and I'm going, dude, he's not going to get this ball.
Yeah.
There's no more place to go. The wall's there. It's good. It's over. And then he just freaking jumps over it. It's not like, oh, you know, he caught it and the wall happened to be. No, he caught it over the wall.
No,
he just completely robbed the hell out of that home run.
It sucks. It changes the game and it changes this award, because I think it's his if it goes out. But the guy who I'm leaning towards, we haven't mentioned yet, it's Pete Alonso again. I'm sorry. Like, go back to the first game of this series. Okay. The one game the Mets won. Pete Alonso is at the plate. They're down 3-2. There's a runner on second and 1 out. He's behind in the count 0-2. And he hits a 2-run home run. The Mets end up scoring 9 runs. They end up winning the game by a lot. But in the 5th inning, they are losing that game. Pete is behind in the count 0-2. And he hits a 2-run home run. So clearly the biggest hit of the game that they won. Then you go to game 1 of the doubleheader, game 2 of this series. He gets a 2-out double again on an 0-2 pitch and scores the first run after Brandon Nimmo drives him in. Same thing in the 3rd inning. He rips a double, setting up a second and third nobody out spot. The problem is the strikeout. And I almost want to not exonerate him, but he walked. The 3-2 pitch was off the freaking plate. So, yeah, he struck out with the bases loaded, one out, down by a run in the eighth inning. I guess we could all kill him for it. But the 3-2 pitch was off the plate. And then in the finale of this doubleheader, what does he do when the Mets are down 2-0? Well, he drives in a run to make it 2-1, an RBI single in the third inning. Draws a walk right after the Juan Soto robbery. Unfortunately, Mark Vientos strikes out looking with the bases loaded. Unfortunately, Brandon Nimmo lines out with the bases loaded. And then he ended up grounding out and striking like everyone else did. But he ended up going 5-for-14 with a home run and 3 RBIs. And again, the biggest hit the Mets got in the one win they got came from Pete Alonso. I got a tough time thinking it's anybody but him.
I mean, he's defining the word clutch. I mean, when you sit there now and question his home runs, I mean, everything seems to be in a big spot. And I'll tell you this much. Juan Soto struck out, I think it was game one of on Sunday, where he struck out, and it was a questionable strike, questionable pitch. And I think he talked a little bit to the umpire, was a little frustrated by that. I trust Juan Soto. I think he knows the strike zone very, very well. You know who I trust even more? It's Pete Alonso.
Yeah.
Pete Alonso, I trust even more with the strike zone. So the fact that he didn't swing at that, I mean, come on.
And I went back and looked at it. It wasn't a strike. It was very close. I'll admit that. But if you look back at the Soto looked strikeouts, they were strikes. I mean, he just got fooled. In the Alonso case, it wasn't. And that's not why I want to give it to him. I want to give it to him because, again, in the one game they won, he got the biggest hit. And so honorable mention of Francisco Alvarez, you're right. Honorable mention of Tyrone Taylor, who was on base a million times. Pete Alonso was out there every single inning in this series, and again, continues to get big hits. He had how many extra base hits? 3 extra base hits, 2 more doubles, plus the home run. So I think it's Pete. I got to tell you, I think it's Pete Alonso. So,
all right.
Congratulations, so we'll give it to Pete. That's his fourth victory.
And how many series? How many series so far have we had?
So let me count this. We've got Edwin Diaz, Pete Alonso, Max Kranich, Pete Alonso, Kodai Senga, Pete Alonso, Lindor, Alvarez, Taylor, and Alonso. So they have now played. They have lost 4 series. The opener against the Astros, the 2 out of 3 against Minnesota, and now these last 2 series against Arizona and St. Louis. They have won 6 series, and they've had a push. So they're 6-4-1. So 11 series. And Pete Alonso has won the Rico I'm the Man Now Star of the Series 4 times. And it could have been a 5th because I was arguing for him last week, too. Even when he doesn't win, he's close. He's like Albert Pujols in the MVP. He either wins the MVP or he's like 2nd.
So let me ask you a question. At the end of this year, at the end of the season, are we giving a prize for the person that has the most stars of the series? Are we going
to
do that?
We're going to go up to them in the locker room and congratulate them and say, you are the Rico I'm the Man Now Star of the Series. What would you like? Would you like $100 in Roblox? Robux? That's what I gave my son. What is that?
Robux, I think.
Robux, right? For Roblox, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if we're going to give him anything, but we'll have a big celebration here on the Rico Bronya.
What you should do is you should give him the rest of that. Do you still have your hair that you shaved off last year?
I do. I still have the hair. You want me to give it to Pete?
I would do that. Maybe that's a prize.
Yeah. Well, Dendell Nunez is back. We didn't get to see him, but he was activated for the second game of the doubleheader, and he should stick around for the Arizona series. Let's see this team bounce back. This is the first bit of adversity this team has faced. Now, if you want to include some of the bad losses to the Washington Nationals, sure. I guess that counts as adversity. But in terms of a stretch of time in which the team is not playing very well, this is it. Like I talked about, in their last 10 games, they have lost 6 of their last 10 games. So it is a stretch of about a week and a half where it's not one thing. And that's what happens when you struggle. Like, I think for most of us, the thing that jumps out at you is lack of clutch hitting. But we've had some mediocre starts mixed in there now, especially the Blake Tidwell disaster. you've had some bullpen collapses mixed in there, even though that was not the case in this series against St. Louis. It's just a little bit of everything, and it's contributed to them coming up short. And I get that you can look at these losses, these six losses in the last 10, and literally say, hey, they should have won that. 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 I get that. Five of the six losses jump out at me as games they should have won. Actually, all of them, now that I think about it, they all do. The two games against the Nationals, they should have won. The two games against the Diamondbacks, they lacked a big hit. They should have won those. And these two games against St. Louis, I guess that makes it worse. Maybe it would be better to lose 13-1. Griffin Canning in the opener of the Arizona series against Ryan Nelson because Corbin Burns is out. David Peterson against Zach Gallen. I hope they'll see Gallen a little bit better. That knuckle curve was dancing the last time they saw him in game two. And then Merrill Kelly against Kodai Senga in the Wednesday afternoon game. The Mets, if they want, and this is really up to them, they do not need to add a sixth starter for a very long time. So hear me out on this. We talked about their starters for the Arizona series, Canning, Peterson, Senga. Then they have an off day. Clay Holmes would start the Friday game against Chicago. Tylor Megill would start the Saturday game, and Griffin Canning would start the Sunday game, all with extra rest. David Peterson would start Monday against the Pirates, again, extra rest. And Kodai Senga would start the Tuesday game against the Pirates, all extra rest. Clay Holmes would then have to come back on regular rest, if the Mets don't mind that, for the finale against the Pirates. Then they have an off day. And so again, Tylor Megill, opener of the Subway Series, extra day of rest. Griffin Canning, Saturday of the Subway Series, extra day of rest. David Peterson, Sunday Subway Series, extra day of rest. Kodai Senga, Monday against the Red Sox. Now we're into the middle of May, May 19th, extra day of rest. Clay Holmes, extra day of rest. Tylor Megill against Boston, regular rest. So far, those would be the only two guys on regular rest. Then they have an off day again. That leads in a Memorial Day weekend. Canning, Peterson, Senga, all with extra rest. Holmes and Megill, regular rest. And then again, if they're okay with it, Griffin Canning on regular rest against the White Sox, and then another off day. So if the Mets want, this is up to them, they do not need to add a sixth starter until June, because then on May 30th, they begin a stretch where they play 10 straight days. So at that point, May 30th to June 8th, then to keep Senga with the extra day, they would need to add a sixth starter. Paul Blackburn is working his way back. Hopefully Sean Manaea will get closer as time goes by. So it's really up to them and how much they care about other starters pitching on regular rest. Is this just a Kodai Senga thing, or how do they feel about everybody else? Now, I want to read this email from Bradley. Bradley sent this email about a week ago. He's followed up a numerous times saying, come on, Evan, you got to read this email. This is a great question. And it is a great question, even though I sort of feel uncomfortable about it because the Mets have a long way to go. You know, and so answering questions about the playoffs, I don't love doing, but it's worthy of the discussion we're having right now concerning extra rest and Kodai Senga and all that. So let me read it. Bradley writes, I really do understand that they are making an extra effort to stay on a six-day rotation with Senga like his body is used to in Japan. I just have one question, and I'd be very interested in your answer. Let's say he has an ace-like year and is in the top five for Cy Young voting. The playoffs are here, and are you all of a sudden pitching him every fifth day? Because that sounds to me like a difficult thing to do after a full year of not doing so. And if not, doesn't that make him much less valuable as a player? Food for thought. Love the show. I think that this is a question that is worthy of debating if they're in the playoffs, when they're in the playoffs, if Senga's healthy. But I'll answer your question now briefly by saying, you can't pitch him on regular rest. You're right. If this guy has a great year and he's doing it exclusively with 5 days or more of rest to all of a sudden ask him to pitch on 4 days rest in the playoffs seems like a terrible idea. Now, what you'll do if you're Mendy is based on the schedule, based on the off days in your series, you'll have it lined up so that he does pitch with an extra day of rest. The American League last year had a divisional series that was laid out very differently than the National League series, if you guys recall. The Yankee Royals series was game, off day, game, off day, game, off day, game. If that's how the National League follows suit, and I think they will this year because that was the AL last year, so I assume the NL will follow it this year, well, then it could be kind of easy to have Kodai Senga pitch twice in a divisional series with multiple off days. If you're fortunate enough to get to the LCS, same thing. I mean, you're just going to have to look at, all right, if I start him in game one, game two, off day, three, four, five, I'll bring him back in game six. Not ideal, but you could still potentially have him pitch twice in a best of seven series. But to answer your question, Bradley, no, I would not want him pitching on 4 days rest if he hadn't done it all year. How could you? So good question. Appreciate you asking it. Let's get to some of your emails. TheRicoB@gmail.com. Mickey from Walcott, Connecticut. I have a question and your thoughts. Since we've got Francisco Alvarez back, our pitching hasn't been the same, it seems. Am I crazy in that correlation? I know that pitchers got a pitch, but Alvy helps them call games. What are your thoughts on how we've been since Alvy and McNeil returned? I think that the Met pitching was unsustainable with the way they started this season. So to think that it was all of a sudden, or it was going to remain at that level, was always unrealistic. So I don't think there is much of a correlation between Francisco Alvarez's return and the Mets struggles. Casey writes, the BABIP nonsense. If I have to hear about BABIP and getting unlucky from any more of these brilliant beat writers, I'm going to lose my mind. BABIP is a cherry-picking stat, and we need to start treating it that way. Do guys get unlucky? Of course they do, but that's baseball. Here's an example of where these stats have done to the game and fans. In response to the stat about the Mets being 4-6 in their last 10, I wrote sarcastically, what about the BABIP? Wins and losses are the only thing that matters. Somebody had the audacity to say, not really. Smart teams like the Mets know that hitting the ball hard will lead to results. What are we doing? Hitting the ball hard is important, but dear God, have we become so dependent on nonsense like this we can't truly evaluate a game anymore? Casey, here's the discourse issue we have on BABIP or exit velocity or anything. I mentioned a lot over the first part of the Rico that the Mets have hit into bad luck. I didn't cite BABIP. Maybe I did exit velocity a little bit, but I cited my eyes and your eyes because, Casey, you watch every Met game. It is obvious that the Mets had bad luck this weekend. So I think, and I'm sure you admit that. I'm sure we all saw it. I mean, Juan Soto hit a ball that was over the freaking fence and it got pulled back. I mean, it is what it is. Brandon Nimmo hit a line drive right on the screws. Unfortunately, it was right at Jordan Walker. So we all saw that the Mets, unfortunately, hit the bad luck. We're all saying the same thing. We're just phrasing it differently. When you cite batting average on balls in play, there's a stat that you're just looking at to say, see, look at the bad luck. Look at Soto's bad luck. Look at Alonso's good luck. Forget that. How about we just look at these last two games? They've hit the bad luck. It's like when exit velo came out. My dad hated it. He's like, exit velo. And I said, you know what it is? It's just the same thing we always used to say. Like, hey, that guy hit the ball really hard. It was just right at the first baseman. We're all saying the same thing. We're just using different, like, ways to describe it, if you know what I mean. Anthony Laporte, a new pitcher named Cy Young kills the Mets. For the 8,326th time, a new pitcher came in and made us look like second graders. I hate this crap. Of course, he's talking about Michael McGreevy. Michael McGreevy was incredible. Credit to him. Howard writes, Mark Vientos' defense cost us game two. The key play in game two was Nolan Arenado's single. Yeah, that was game two of the doubleheader, game three of the series. Gary and Keith showed five replays of Mason Wynn twisting his ankle at third and did not say one word about the poor throw by Mark Vientos and the non-scoop by Pete Alonso. A good throw on a not-tough play has Arenado by two steps. This occurred with two outs and made the score 4-3 from 4-2. Next batter tied it at 4. If Vientos is able to make a decent throw or your favorite scooper comes up with the pick, it was a tough one. The score is 4-2. In fact, the expected batting average on that play was 170, meaning the most major league third basemans make that play 170. I got to tell you, I disagree a little bit, man. I thought it was a tricky play. It was a bad throw, and Arenado is not the fastest guy in the world, but he had to charge it. He had to come up quick. Like, I don't think it was the easiest play in the world. And obviously, on Pete's case, it was a very tough scoop. Pete has spoiled us because he's made a lot of those scoops. But I don't know, man. I think the Mets got lucky in that Wynn should have scored. And that's where the bad throw would have felt worse, because it's one thing for Arenado to just beat that, even though he is a slow base runner. But the scoop and Pete not coming up with it clean and the ball bouncing away should have added to the second run. But unfortunately, it didn't matter because Wilson Contreras got the hit anyway. Dr. Anthony writes, every time Soto squares to bunt, I can hear you scream, LOL. I don't mind it when he's trying to draw on the third baseman. I mind it when he's actually doing it. All right, Scott Stern has a scorebook question. I believe Mark Vientos has now struck out 3 straight times with the bases loaded and less than 2 outs. Okay, that was more of a statement than a question. But here's a question. Should we have a GOAT of the series that we lose? Yeah, a few people have brought that up, that along with the Rico star of the series, we should have a net negative of this series. Here's my own OCD with that. I would have wanted to have done it from the beginning of the season. I don't like having the Rico star of the series, and then all of a sudden in the middle of the year, we started announcing the net negative of the series. So here's what we'll consider. And Hoff, it's a little bit of a research project. I'm okay with creating, based on what the people want, the GOAT or net negative of the series. But I feel like you and I, probably privately, I don't think we have to do it on the Rico, have to go through the first 11 series and name net negatives just so we have a record of who the GOAT of each series would be. Because I don't know why. I don't love starting it like in the middle of the year. Feels unfair. You know what I mean? You're on mute, by the way, Hoff. So if you want to talk,
I did notice that. Yeah, I have that issue from here and there, time. But to be honest with you, I got to be honest. I'd love to do that. I would love to go back and pick out some people that really sucked and were the net negatives. I can name Ryan Stanek for
the Washington series. Easy, yes.
No doubt. I could probably, I got to be honest, you might see Brandon Nimmo's name up there a couple times. Just saying. I'd be honored to do it myself.
You know what? We have hired Pete Hoffman, not only as the executive producer of the Rico, he is going to be the historian to go back to the first 11 series and nominate a Rico net negative of each series. And then, starting with the Diamondback series, I guess we could start with this series because we are doing our recap edition right now. We could name our GOAT. By the way, who would be the net negative of this 3-game series loss to the St. Louis Cardinals? Like, does somebody jump out at you as the net negative of this series? I guess we could pick on poor Blake Tidwell and just bury his ass.
Yeah, but you have to do players, right? You can't do coach.
No, it's got to be players. It's got to be. It's too easy to say, oh, I'm going to blame the manager. it's got to be one player. And the reason we do that is because for the last 25 years in my scorebook, I have a star of the series, and I always only pick one guy. Like, it's always been a hard, fast rule in my head where that's it. It's one guy. So off the top of my head, for this series that they lost, like, no one really jumps out at me as somebody that I want to just go after and say, yeah, he was the net negative. I mean, want to tell me Soto because he missed out on so many opportunities with guys in scoring position? I mean, you're going to get on him. You want to go with Vientos for not coming through with the bases loaded? You want to go with him? You want to bury the kid Blake Tidwell just because he sucked in his major league debut?
This series might be actually the toughest to do because there's so many people that you could highlight. I mean, maybe it's McGill, you know, because you're going up against a guy that I mean, the Mets are hitting every ball like 113 miles per hour off of, Polentes or whatever his name is. And you just feel like if McGill has a halfway decent outing, goes deep into this game and can keep you, you know, not have to go to the bullpen early, this should be a game that he could dominate. And then the Mets should win this game. So maybe it's McGill. Maybe it's his fault they lost game two.
Yeah. It almost has to be someone who represents the lack of the big hit, because that's really the feeling we had after losing these two games. But it's tough to find the one person to pick on. And you want to go with Brandon Nimmo? He did go 0 for 5 in the last. I mean, that's right up your alley. He went 0 for 5 in the last game of the series. And actually finished the series going 0 for his last 8 after his RBI double in the first inning. Yeah, it's probably him.
I'll take that. I like that.
I'm sure you would.
Well, the only other guy I was looking at was who went 0 for 4 was Zokar. But I don't really know if we want to.
Tough to kill him. All right, one last email to ricob@gmail.com. By the way, for these West Coast games against Arizona Monday and Tuesday, be ready. Because assuming Hoff doesn't fall asleep, assuming I don't fall asleep, the Mets are known for awful West Coast losses and amazing West Coast wins. If we get any of that, we'll probably do an instant reaction, Rico. That's why you should subscribe. If you subscribe to the Rico Bronya, you'll never miss it. The one thing we guarantee you, of course, is Rico's after each series ends. So the Arizona series will end on Wednesday late afternoon at some point on Wednesday night, early Thursday morning. You'll get your Rico wrapping up the series in Arizona. But Kendrick writes an interesting email about Nolan Arenado. He writes, revisiting an Arenado trade. And this is on the heels of the criticism of Mark Vientos' defense. So listen to this one carefully. Kendrick writes, this team this year can compete for a championship. This team this year has an opportunity to trade for a Hall of Fame third baseman. This team this year has plenty of talented bats waiting for an opportunity. With all that said, I believe it's time we revisit the Nolan Arenado trade discussion. After watching this series, I am even more confident that this team needs Nolan Arenado and should not allow third base to be a question mark. Here's what I would call quality over quantity trade offer. Mark Vientos or Brett Beatty plus Jeff McNeil for Nolan Arenado. I think it's pretty clear we've reached a point where we know there's only room for one of the two, Beatty or Vientos, in the organization. So we might as well cash in while we can. Would this be an overpay? Maybe. But is it worth it? I believe so. This week, when you said that Mikal Bridges' putback was worth 2 first-rounders, I agree. And so I can see us saying the same thing about an Arenado home run or defensive play in October. Lindor, Soto, Pete Arenado seems too good to pass up if the Cardinals are still open for business. I would not trade Mark Vientos for Nolan Arenado. Let's start right there. Jeff McNeil, I don't think does anything for the St. Louis Cardinals. So forget about what you're giving up for Nolan Arenado. I think it's worthy of saying, hey, would you want to trade for Nolan Arenado? And where you make a lot of sense, Kendrick, and where you can convince me, is the man's defense. Because the man still plays third base like he's Brooks Robinson. I don't think he has much left offensively. Even his base hits were not exactly ripped. I think if you trade for Nolan Arenado, what you're doing, if you're the Mets, is saying, Mark Vientos, go hit and be our DH. And maybe next year you go back to third base. I don't know. But for this championship run, we want to really solidify our defense. And we're going to put Arenado at third, figuring his offense isn't much worse than the Mets are getting at DH, and make Vientos the DH. If that's your argument, I get it. But I ain't giving up what you said. I'll take him back. Like, I'll basically take his contract and make the Cardinals pay for half of it. But that's a fair argument, because I don't know what we're going to say about the Met DH spot come late July. Maybe it's filled internally. Maybe Brett Beatty comes back up because of this Jesse Winker injury and hits a ton. Maybe. Maybe Drew Gilbert ends up here, and that kind of takes the pressure off of DH, and Brandon Nimmo ends up DHing. Like, there's a lot of things that could happen. But if we're sitting here in late July and we're like, man, they're not getting a lot of production out of DH, you could argue that, all right, let's just bring in Arenado. He'll give you the same production as the Winker Marte platoon, but he'll improve the defense tenfold because he still plays a gold glove third base. So I don't think that's crazy. It's a discussion for 2 months from now, but I don't think it's crazy because you're right, watching Arenado a lot over the last week and a half. I don't think he has a lot left offensively, but man, could he play defense. Man, could he play defense. Sad for Danny Young, Tommy John surgery, so he'll be gone for the foreseeable future. It definitely opens up an opportunity for Genesis Cabrera, who pitched better in his second performance than his first. And should be interesting to see what Dednail Nunez does, assuming he sticks around now for a while after a great impact he had last year. We'll see if he can re-enter the circle of trust. Three games coming up in Arizona. Hopefully they turn this thing around. Two out of three in Arizona would be amazing. Right now, doesn't feel like that. It feels like this little stretch we're in is going to extend, and it's going to get more difficult with the Cubbies coming to town over the weekend. Thoughts? You can email us, thericob@gmail.com. Thericob@gmail.com. Again, remember, subscribe to The Rico Bronya, because instant reaction Ricos can happen when you least expect it. Thank you very much for listening, downloading, and subscribing to Rico Bronya.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Rico Bronya podcast. It's amazing, isn't it? Make sure you download it now to keep it on you at all times.